miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps thrive on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Honey, on the lone highway. Let me pour another on the lone highway. Hello and welcome to the Scorpio Conspiracy Show. Today's date is Saturday, May 23rd, 2020. And welcome to the new Dark Ages 2.0, where a new black plague has struck the earth. Only this time, it's mostly imaginary. A fully weaponized media is now working 24/7 to reconfigure your perception of reality and fill you full of fear with the express purpose of making you more malleable and to get you to accept the so-called new normal. Behavioral psychology is being implemented on society at large. And we now are the new Pavlov's dogs. Only this time, it isn't a nice tasty Scooby snack that's being offered. No, this time it's a nice big plate of fear that's supposed to activate our saliva glands. Not long ago, surgical masks and surgical gloves were the prerequisites for performing surgery. And the only people who wore surgical face shields were performing an autopsy or operating a bone saw. But not any longer. No. Now they are the necessary garb to go to the grocery store and pick up a few items for dinner. Yes, taxi cabs, grocery stores, and bathrooms are now fully sanitized like an operating room for your protection. Any and all human interaction has been deemed dangerous and must be curtailed at all costs. Bizarre new rituals to protect us from the virus are being enacted. Slopping antibacterial gel on everything and compulsive hand washing are now completely normal and no longer a sign of mental illness. Spraying the streets with everything antibacterial solution has become ubiquitous. It won't be long before we are swinging a dead chicken over our heads and chanting magical spells of protection to keep us safe. Yes, there is no bridge that cannot be crossed as long as we are promised safety. Yes, safety is the only goal. Never mind that the Constitution and society as we know it are being slowly flushed down the toilet. But that's only if we let them. Only if we let them, guys. Okay, well, thanks for tuning in here to Revolution Radio and the Scorpio Conspiracy Show. I'm going to check the chat room here, see who's aboard. We've got Sub Harvester, Lumen Jingos. Hello, Lumen. Comet, Mona Radler, Popsicle Toes, Laird Clarendon, SJ, Fact or Theory, Monster 383, Stardust Man, Mayor Bailey, Lady Horse, Wall E, and Dirt Engineer. So, anyone out there listening, if you want to come join in the chat room, come on to freedomslips.com. Scroll down the page a little ways and join in on the chat and let your voice be heard. Okay, so I hope everyone's enjoying the holiday weekend. And what I'm seeing right now is we're kind of in a strange
part of this coronavirus timeline right now. We're kind of in a holding pattern in some ways, because we're starting to see these attempts to reopen our society. And we're getting the first glimpses of what this so-called new normal is going to look like. And frankly, it's not a pretty picture from where I sit. I'm not liking this new reality that they're trying to unveil. And I really don't think most people are going to sit back and just accept this passively. I really don't. You know, the idea that everybody is supposed to wear a mask throughout the summertime, you know, when it's hot, that is truly, truly insane and totally unacceptable. I mean, we're entering into some nice summer weather all over the country, and people are supposed to wear a mask? Give me a break, guys. And the idea that people are supposed to wear a mask at work for 8 hours at a time, 5 days a week, frankly, it's nothing short of, you know, cruel and unusual punishment, right? Cruel and unusual punishment. I mean, wearing one of those masks for 10 or 15 minutes is awful. You start to feel like you're getting claustrophobic. Yeah, it's just insane. And, you know, the idea that we're supposed to keep 6 feet apart is equally unacceptable. They really are trying to re-engineer the way in which human beings interact with one another. I mean, this is the biggest social experiment we've ever lived through. And, you know, more importantly, they're really trying to limit healthy discussion between human beings about what is going on. That's the real purpose of this social distancing. Because, you know, they know damn well that this new reality they're trying to unveil isn't going to be popular with the average person. And, you know, I don't think it's going to work out, quite honestly. You know, it's going to be very difficult to convince people to live the way they're trying to tell us to. And, you know, more than ever, this is the time to really stand up and say, no, no more, as Hawk says on the intro. No more, I say. So we're kind of in a holding pattern right now because, you know, many people I know, they're still thinking that, you know, society is just going to go back to normal and, you know, they're going to allow us to be the way we were, so to speak. And it hasn't yet dawned on most people that, you know, our masters, you know, the controllers of society, they intend for these changes to be permanent for the foreseeable future. You know, they're playing little games with us about, oh, you know, we're going to open things back up and, you know, just another week or two and everything's going to be back to normal. Don't worry, just one more week. You can go back to the beach, but only with our new set of rules. You can walk in the water, but you can't lie on the sand because, you know, the sand, it's a well-known fact that sand is a carrier of viruses, you know. Yeah, especially sand that's hot and in the sun. You know, that's just chock full of viruses. Yeah. And, you know, you can go out to eat, but only with minimal social interaction. So, but, you know, strangely, I'm quite optimistic in some ways, you know, despite all the doom and gloom that the mainstream media has been force feeding us for what, four, going on 5 months? And we really have an opportunity right now to reach, you know, so-called normies, because, you know, many of the experts, these all-knowing experts and all-knowing scientists have been completely wrong about this pandemic, haven't they? I mean, it's been a pretty much of an epic fail. And quite frankly, they've kind of had their asses handed to them and they're starting to look like fools. You know, this little imp, Anthony Fauci, this guy is all over the place now, you know, One day, wearing a mask won't help. And the next day, you got to wear a mask forever. Can't shake hands. Can't do that. And I guess he came out the other day and said, I don't know, but these lockdowns actually might be bad for people. Gee, really? That's a shocker. So, you know, predictions of global doom have been wrong for the most part at this point, right? I mean, life seems to be moving right along despite their efforts to curtail any basic human behavior. Because basically, you know, any human behavior might spread the virus, so we just can't allow that. But only for a couple more weeks, don't worry. But I do feel optimistic in some ways. You know, and this really is the time for all of us that are educated on, you know, the agenda and, you know, people that are listening to this show and to Revolution Radio. It's really time to go out and try to educate those around us. It's the perfect time to reach, you know, these so-called normies, because I know that many of them have had their, you know, faith shaken in the system. And they're starting to wonder, like, gee, who are these experts? And, you know, why should I let them mold the way I think? So we have a real opportunity to kind of reach people that we may not have been able to before. From the chat room, Lumen Jingos, Gates, Moderna, Vax kills millions. Many a normie will wake up. Oh, when Gates, Moderna, Vax kills millions, many a normie will wake up. Yeah, that's true. But let's hope it happens before that, because once they get this precedent set that, you know, you've got to take a vaccine, that's going to happen every year. You know, so you know, we just got to work to avoid that. Yeah, so I'm glad to see people there in the chat room cooking away. That's good. So, you know, what I'm seeing in real life is that more people than ever are starting to see that the system masters, have taken us all on a collective ride. You know, they really have taken us on a ride, and a ride to a place where none of us wanted to go. You know, because basically this whole thing, when you break it all down and, you know, get the wheat from the chaff, it's basically akin to a bad flu season. You know, I was just reading this article the other day that I think in 1969 or 1968, there was some kind of, you know, terrible flu season that killed, you know, tons of people. I don't remember the statistics, but it was quite severe, apparently. I was too young to remember that, but strangely, you know, they didn't shut the whole world down over it. And that's partly because they didn't have the infrastructure in place to be able to pull off a stunt like they have this time. And, you know, and all these modelings that they've done, you know, from the Imperial College in London, pretty much all wrong. And they're still cranking out these bogus computer models. You know, these GIGO models, garbage in, garbage out. Oh, you can't open up society too quickly, or there's going to be 250,000 dead people in America by, I think they said that by the end of July. That's the newest one I read. But she's like, okay, yeah, tell me another one, you know. So the other thing too is, you know, I know it can be difficult when you go out and talk to people, because, you know, nobody wants to be rejected and, you know, be told that they're crazy. And what I'm seeing, though, you know, when you talk to people, even if they outright reject what you're saying, you still plant a little seed of doubt in their minds. And, you know, they might reject what you say, but there's going to be a little voice in their head that's going to make them start wondering, he couldn't be right, could he? No, he couldn't be right. Well, is he right? Gosh, I don't know. So slowly but surely, these kind of things do affect people. And especially as they see this agenda try to unfold. And I've seen it firsthand, you know. Years ago, when I got into this kind of research back in the 90s, a lot of my friends really thought I was crazy and, you know, used to kind of make fun of me. Well, that's crazy Dave, you know, he's off on his conspiracy theories. But, you know, fast forward to today, many of those same people actually call me and ask me, hey, what do you think's going on, Dave? So, you know, you just have to be patient with people. We all kind of wake up on our own schedule, so to speak. And, you know, just the other day, it's kind of funny. I was talking to a couple of maskers, right? This couple, they both had their masks on, and we just started talking. And I said, well, hey, guys, why are you still wearing masks? You know, we're heading into summer. There's nice warm weather coming. You don't need to be wearing a mask anymore. There's no reason for it. And then they gave me this whole speech about, no, this is all necessary. You know, we're still in a lot of danger and, you know, blah, 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 blah. You guys have heard it all before. So I let them, you know, talk on a little more. And then, you know, I kind of left them with this thought. I said, do you really think you're going to get your freedom back when this is over? If you just sit back and comply with whatever they tell you, is that really what you think? And they looked shocked. They kind of looked at each other. They looked shocked and they sort of just walked away without saying another word to me. And I know they wanted to think I was crazy, but I could also just feel the vibe, you know, that there was a little seed of doubt planted in their mind about that. And, you know, maybe it'll grow, maybe it won't. That's not up to me. But we have to be kind of like little Johnny Apple seeds, planting little seeds of truth in people's minds. It was kind of a funny situation in a surreal kind of way, you know. Just the way they kind of just walked away like, oh, no, that can't be true. Yeah, so what I'm kind of seeing too is with this new normal, they really are trying to suck the joy, you know, out of everything with this corona hysteria, you know, suck the joy out and replace it with fear. Because, you know, everything we're supposed to do now is based on fear. You know, wash your hands 20 times a day until you see, you know, raw flesh, you know, wear a mask everywhere and just be afraid of our own shadows. That's supposed to be the essence of where we are now. And, you know, they're trying to suck the joy out of little things like, you know, just going to the grocery store and talking to people without fear and, you know, maybe flirt with the checkout girl a little bit, you know, little things like that. And, you know, I was wondering too, like, how are young people supposed to develop spring romances with masks on, you know? I mean, how are you supposed to go, wow, she's good looking. You know, how are you supposed to do that with a mask on? It's not going to be easy. I guess you can do it, but when you can't see the other person's face, you really can't even communicate, much less determine if you think the other person is attractive. Or even, you know, just trying to say hi to a, you know, some sweet little old lady that passes by you in the aisle at the local grocery store. That's difficult because, you know, so many of these old people now, they're really full of fear and mistrust. And it's really sad. There's just no reason for it. And, you know, making the elderly fearful is really probably not such a great thing for their health, is it? No, it is not. And I'll tell you, you know, older people, we're all creatures of habit, but especially as you get older, you become more of a creature of habit. You know, I've seen that in myself. And, you know, people in their 70s and 80s, they're really creatures of habit. And breaking the routine is actually really, really tough on older people. And of course, you know, that's not good for them either. You know, my uncle that lives in San Diego, you know, they just reopened the golf courses. So he hasn't been able to play golf. That was like one of his things he did to kind of stay active and all this. And he was telling me the other day that they've opened the courses, but everyone's got to stay apart from each other. And this is so ridiculous. You can't pick up the ball, you know, out of the hole with your hand anymore. You can't pick up the golf ball with your hand, right? They've got this special tool that they're handing out, because they don't want people sticking their hand in the hole there to take the ball out, because it might spread the virus. You know, even though golf courses are in the sun, especially in San Diego, just ridiculous, all these stupid rules they're making just to keep people afraid, basically. Ah, yes, Factor Theory is saying they program the public with the script. Ah, that is so true. This is a script. We're living in a movie. It's like a B-grade science fiction pandemic movie. And another good observation by Fact or Theory. Think of all the pension money saved if they can kill off the seniors. Oh, yes. Yes, it's all about the money. Never mind the fact that all these old people work their whole lives paying into the system and producing things to keep society running. Never mind that. Yeah, it's a real psychopathic way of looking at things that these controllers we have. And they're kind of showing us just, you know, so to speak, you know, the mask is slipping off, for lack of a better term. They're really showing us who they are. So, yeah, you know, and all this fear, it's really been generated by the mainstream media. You know, it's this colossus that they've created to scare us, this boogeyman, you know, this phantom menace. And we should never forget that we are dealing with a fully weaponized mainstream media now. You know, it's to the point where you can't believe a damn thing they tell you, because we are living in a sea of lies. A sea of lies. We really are. I mean, it's to the point now where if I heard on TV that it's sunny outside, I wouldn't believe it unless I looked out the window and checked for myself. I mean, it's becoming a theater of the absurd with this mainstream media. I don't think they realize how absurd they're starting to look to more and more people. And as it stands now, you know, pretty much any type of tyranny can be implemented under the guise of this coronavirus, right? I mean, you know, it's kind of like an anything goes kind of situation. You know, like in some states, you can buy lotto tickets, booze, and weed, but you can't go get a haircut or buy home improvement products, or women can't get their nails done, you know. So, yeah, this kind of petty tyranny is becoming sort of ubiquitous, isn't it? So, yeah, Tones was asking me if I wanted a bottom of the hour break. Sure, why not? Let's go ahead and play around with some more of your new bumpers and stuff. Those are really good. So, yeah, let's go for that. Okay. So, yeah, it's becoming a theater of the absurd. And, you know, I could almost imagine, you know, the some scientist coming on television and saying, well, you know, if you hop around on one foot when you walk, it might help you protect you against the virus. Our studies have shown, our computer modeling has shown, if you walk on one foot and hop around and walk in a funny way, it'll actually help prevent you from getting the virus. Kind of like the old Monty Python Ministry of Silly Walks. I can almost imagine a Ministry of Silly Walks being created to protect us from the virus. Who knows? But one interesting thing that I'm seeing here, as we're all supposed to be fixated on this virus, is that many of these agendas that were already in place are actually ramping up and progressing full speed ahead as we are distracted and obsessed with the phantom menace. And, you know, I mentioned on the last show that, you know, thousands of prisoners are being released from jail, and over 20,000 at this point, many of whom are dangerous criminals, felons, including some rapists and carjackers and, you know, people have already committed murders that have been let out of jail. And the whole point of this is just to sort of break the system down at every level that they can. That's what they're trying to do. And we just should just be aware of that, you know? Factor Theory is saying they live live from New York. That's right. That was a great movie though, huh? That movie was so real. And as time goes on, it's becoming more real somehow. Yeah, good old Rowdy Roddy Piper. That was a great one, man. So anyway, the other thing that I'm seeing, and I'm just learning more about this, is this this immigration agenda, this replacement level immigration agenda is continuing right under our noses. And, you know, I'm not anti-immigration. I think some immigration is healthy for a society. I think it's good and normal. But when you're dealing with weaponized immigration, that's a different matter altogether. And you'd think, you know, if this crisis was as bad as they're telling us, if it was nearly as bad as they're telling us, they would just say, hey, we can't let anyone in the country until this is over. It's just not safe. We can't let people in, especially from third world countries where there really aren't any health records or documentation. We just can't do that. We're going to have to wait until the crisis is over, right? That would make sense, wouldn't it? And it's kind of a tip-off that this isn't what they're telling us it is. So yeah, it would make sense. Like, no, we can't let anyone else in for a while. Sorry, guys. We're going to have to wait till the virus is gone. But of course, that's not happening. And in fact, they're actually accelerating this replacement level immigration and weaponized immigration as we speak. And they're using the United Nations, of course. It's behind so many things. And I'm sure many of you have already heard of the fairly secretive United Nations refugee resettlement program. Not talked about much. Especially in the mainstream media. And it's hard to find much information about it. But recently, there was a woman who came on a radio show with the host is Josh Tolley. And this woman claims to be a whistleblower. And she's based out of Missouri. And she said some things. I always take whistleblowers, you know, with a little bit of skepticism. But many of the things this woman says really does check out. And she claims that she was involved in this program with the UN. And it's being operated in conjunction with Agenda 2030. And they're trying to basically increase immigration into the United States like they have in Europe. And this is being accelerated right now. This is typical where, you know, we're distracted by one thing and the magician pulls another rabbit out of the hat, so to speak, right? So this woman is, you know, a whistleblower, and so she's not using her real name, but the information kind of checks out. She participated in this program through her state because they're using the local state governments. You know, once they get them in the country, then they're working with the state governments. And she said that the refugees are being brought into the U.S. with the help of the UN Refugee Resettlement Organization Office of Refugee Monitoring. That sounds important. Out of Washington, D.C. And for example, in her state, the Missouri Social Services Administration are administering the program. Okay. So, and they are using this program in Missouri and all over the country. And this program provides not only housing, but welfare, food stamps, Medicare, and jobs and some spending money too. Yeah. So, and I can confirm this part of her story from personal knowledge, Because I know a woman who worked for the county of San Diego, and at the time, her job was helping these refugees getting settled in their furnished apartments. Yes, furnished apartments. And not only were the apartments furnished, but the refrigerator was already stocked full of food for them when they got there, if you can believe that. And that's a story directly from someone who was there that I know personally. And, you know, this upset her and angered her to no end to have to participate in this. But, you know, it was another person working for the county. She didn't want to lose her job. And then to add irony to the situation, they actually put one of these refugees in an apartment next to her sometime later. And the guy was like from Afghanistan or somewhere like that, one of these countries that has like zero cultural ties to Western civilization. And anyway, there was some kind of conflict that happened between them. This some kind of outrageous behavior on his part that she just couldn't take anymore, making a bunch of noise or something like that. I don't remember what it was. But anyway, the cops were called to try to resolve this because the guy was like, hey, screw you. I'm a refugee. You can't do shit to me. And when the cops came, they pulled her aside and told her flat out that they really can't do anything because of his refugee status. And the cops weren't all that thrilled about it either, but that's what they told her. So, yeah, an unbelievable situation there. And so anyway, this whistleblower from Missouri, this woman continues saying that there is zero vetting of these refugees, and many of them are so-called FUNUs, which is an acronym for full name unknown. Yeah. And most of these are males, single males, you know, between 18 and 45, with far fewer women and children. And this is the same scheme they were playing in Europe, if you recall. Same exact modus operandi. And she was saying that Trump tried to reduce the number of refugees coming in because Obama wanted 110,000 per year. So Trump lowered it down to 50,000. But it's not only Democrats that want, you know, all these refugees flooding in. Paul Ryan actually advocated bringing 300,000 refugees in per year. And don't forget that each refugee with the concept of chain migration is able to bring in up to 10 family members. So you can add a zero to those figures, right? So 100,000 becomes 1 million per year. And this is, of course, all on top of the regular immigration programs, which let in more than 1 million legal immigrants already. Plus chain migration, these legal immigrants can bring in up to 10 family members as well. And so, again, I'm not, you know, ragging on immigrants. I think some of it's good, but this is an example of weaponized immigration, and that's what we're facing here. And of course, it's being continued and accelerated while we're all thinking about the virus. That's the whole point. Because I've been wondering, like, isn't anything else going on in the whole world but this stupid virus scare? Well, that's one example of what's going on. And apparently these refugees are transported for settlement at the dead of night. So they avoid you know, the general public seeing them at the airports and seeing them settle into their new houses and apartments. And this woman goes on to continue about the Wilson Fish program, which allows U.S. government to circumvent state sovereignty in terms of resettling these immigrants. So the states have no choice. They're just told, we're bringing these people in, and you have to accommodate them because we say so. And they're also using several third-party organizations that are making money from this, from taxpayer money. And this includes the Jewish Vocational Services, which also uses the name Jewish Technical Services. That sounds innocuous. Catholic charities and several Lutheran organizations. And apparently they receive, these organizations receive $2,500 to process each refugee, plus block grants to staff their offices. So this is a business, you know, like everything else. This is a business and they're making money. So yeah, that's going on today. And then the last thing she said, I think this is more speculative than some of her other information, but her closing comment is that the refugees are a tool of invasion by the United Nations under the Agenda 2030 agenda to remove national borders. And I think that's very possibly true as well. And she claims that the UN says they have the right to bring in peacekeeping soldiers if there's enough refugees in a certain area. So, you know, I've heard all these stories about UN trucks and UN peacekeepers coming to the States, but none of it has actually materialized as of yet. But these are stories I've been hearing for a long time, and I think they're more speculative, but certainly possible. Certainly possible. And let's see what's going on with the chat room. Okay, Lumen Jingo says the Aquiline-nosed tribe is going all in like a poker game to destroy the pale-skinned descendants of Europe. Yes, that sounds certainly possible. That might be more than a conspiracy theory there. Yeah. Okay, I just want to say, too, in the second hour, I do have a guest that I'm going to bring on. And so look forward to that, having a nice conversation with Terry. And we'll get to him in just a few minutes here. But I just want to continue on before I bring him on. There's one more thing I wanted to bring up. And this is this idea that, you know, we're supposed to think that this virus was all just a big happenstance. And it was just no one knew it was coming. It was just, who knew? Right? Kind of like, oh, we never thought that airplanes might crash into the Twin Towers. Who would have ever thought that? Well, I'm not even sure if it was really airplanes. But either way, you see my point. But it turns out that, you know, we hear Bill Gates talking about this. We need to have a vaccine ID and all this, right? It's supposed to be, this is all new thinking. But it turns out that the EU released a study in 2018 to try to get this agenda moving in 2018. And they released a report titled, the 2018 State of Vaccine Confidence. And then on back of that, they had another report called Designing and Implementing an Immunization Information System and the Plausibility of an EU-wide Vaccination Monitoring System. So they've been cooking this stuff up for a long time. And I think this actually goes back to 2010, with the lockstep document from the Rockefeller Foundation. But this, I'm going to just focus on this thing from 2018 just for a brief moment here. And in the third quarter of 2019, these reports were combined into this thing they called the Vaccination Roadmap. So they're making new reports and then combining them and putting new titles on them. They got to do something, all these high-paid bureaucrats in the WHO and other places. And it was a long-term plan. This vaccination roadmap is a long-term policy plan to spread vaccine awareness and understanding while counteracting vaccine myths and combating vaccine hesitancy. Oh, are you vaccine hesitant? I think I might be. And just a couple little blurbs from their report. To examine the feasibility of determining a common vaccination card /passport for EU citizens. Develop EU guidance for establishing comprehensive electronic immunization information systems. Ooh, that sounds good. For effective monitoring of immunization programs. And overcoming the legal and technical barriers impeding the interoperability of national immunization information systems. Boy, I love all this bureaucraties. I like this last one the best, overcoming legal and technical barriers. Because it's like, okay, they know this is basically illegal the way the laws are now. So we have to overcome the legal barriers, which pretty much means, hey, let's just change the laws, right? We'll just change the laws to suit our purpose. And that's what they're doing. So just continuing on here briefly, then on September 12th, 2019, at the joint EU-WHO Vaccination Summit, the Global Vaccination Summit, they announced the 10 actions towards vaccination for all. Okay, so this is all before this so-called pandemic broke out. This has all been planned. And of course, interesting date, you know, picking September 12th to have this joint conference. Yeah, September 12th. Mm-hmm. Just a coincidence, of course. And it's interesting just how this is all one big spider web between the WHO, the UN, and various NGOs, you know, non-government organizations, funded by the same small group of oligarchs, you know, including, of course, everyone's favorite, Bill Gates. And, you know, putting that towards whatever nation is in their crosshairs at the moment. Because, of course, this is all global, like everything else, right? So anyway, they took all these different reports and put them together and published it as a call to action in November 2019. And then just 1 month later, China reported its first case of COVID-19. So this is all very convenient. And then, of course, this all came together as Event 201 in New York City, of course, of all places, which I find an interesting choice. New York City, which is, of course, the epicenter for this big pandemic we're in now, right? And just lastly, we're getting near the top of the hour, and I'm going to bring on my guest in just a few minutes. So lastly, we're going to go through these 7 bullet points that they called for in this Event 201. And it's all very interesting, especially number 7. But I'll just read through a couple of them because it's all such bureaucrat ease. But you can see what they had planned before this thing even started. I mean, right before it started, conveniently. So number 1, governments, international organizations, and businesses should plan now for how to essential corporate capabilities to be utilized during a large-scale pandemic. So they're calling for, you know, big business and government to work together, which sounds all nice and everything like that. But, where have we heard this before? You know, government and big corporations working together. Yeah, that sounds like fascism, or you could say communism, because this is going to be a hybridized system that they're trying to enact upon the world. And then number 2, industry, national governments, and international organizations should work together to enhance internationally held stockpiles of medical countermeasures to enable rapid and equitable distribution during a severe pandemic. And the World Health Organization, conveniently, has a huge stockpile of influenza vaccine. Huh. So they're already thinking about a vaccine that they might need for a global scale here just a month before this all happened. And this number 3 is kind of strange. Countries, international organizations, and global transportation companies should work together to maintain travel and trade during severe pandemics. So travel, you want to maintain travel during a severe pandemic. Well, that's a little odd, isn't it? You'd think you'd want to curtail that during a severe pandemic. But no, apparently that's what they want. They want to add or continue travel. So I'm trying to get Terry added into the call here. We'll just wait till the break here and I'll get you on. We only have about 5 or 6 minutes left. Oh, he wants me to connect so we can listen. Ah, yes. Okay. So let's see. All righty. We'll get him on here as we're thinking about how we need to have plenty of travel during a pandemic. Yeah. Okay. There we go. I got him on there. Okay. So I'm just going to skip down the last one here because I find this the most interesting. Government and private sector should assign a greater priority to developing methods to combat mis- and disinformation prior to the next pandemic response. So they want to make sure that there's no dissenting viewpoints, essentially, because anything outside of their official story obviously has got to be misinformation or disinformation. So they continue, governments will need to partner with traditional and social media companies to research and develop nimble approaches. Ooh, I like that word, nimble. A nimble approach to counteracting misinformation. This will require the development of the ability to flood media with a fast, accurate, and consistent public information, and health authorities should work with private employers and trusted community leaders, such as faith leaders, to promulgate factual information to employees and citizens. And what's interesting in this, this is a veiled threat that public health authorities should work with private employers. So it's kind of like, hey, if you speak out, you're going to lose your job, pal. That's what I get from that. And then they're going to recruit faith leaders to help them in their propaganda efforts. That's very strange. And something just seems wrong about that, doesn't it? You know, having faith leaders become propagandists for the newest agenda that they cook up. But it's right here on the documents, guys. And then finally, trusted influential private sector employers should create the capacity to readily and reliably augment public messaging, manage rumors and misinformation. You got to manage those rumors, guys. Can't have those. Only the official story. And amplify credible information to support emergency and public communications. National health agencies should work in close collaboration with the WHO. Oh, yeah, you got to get the global organizations working with the national health agencies and the local health agencies and even faith leaders. Your local priests need to get involved in spreading the information to you. So there's no other option other than their particular viewpoint about what's going on. And then the last thing here is, for their part, media companies should commit to ensuring that authoritative messages are prioritized and that false messages are suppressed, including through the use of technology. Well, we've certainly seen that with all the delete, delete, delete going on with, you know, Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. And, you know, whoever wrote these documents had the clout to actually make it happen. Because, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, let's all do this. This is a good idea, huh? But it's another thing entirely to have the clout to make it happen. You know, to make it happen on pretty much a global scale. So, yeah, this has been planned and we got the documents to prove it. Yeah. And Lumen Jingos is saying, all of these ops are planned years in advance, leading up to a simulation that magically becomes real. Yeah, it's like magic. We're going live. What's his name? Well, the big fat guy that works for Trump, the ex-CIA guy. His name escapes me right now. But he said, oh, we're in a live exercise, guys. Oh, wait, I mean, this is a real thing. No, this is a real thing, not a live exercise. Oh, yeah, Pompeo. Yeah, Pompeo. Thank you, Terry. Okay, so we're down to the closing minutes of the first hour. And next hour, just a couple of minutes, I'm bringing on Terry. In fact, I'll just bring him on here just to say hi and get started here. Terry, are you there?
I'm here, Dave.
Ah, great, great. Good. Okay, good. I just want to make sure that people are able to hear Terry in the chat room. If you could just let me know. I think you might want to turn your volume up just a little bit, Terry, if you can. Okay. Yeah, so great. Good. Mayor Bailey calls him Pompeius Pompeo. Pompous Pompeo. Yeah, that's pretty good. So, Terry, I just want to thank you for coming on. And I haven't known you a real long time, but I've found you to be a man of not only great knowledge and intelligence, but also wisdom, because intelligence and wisdom are two totally different things. So thanks for coming on.
Well, you're welcome, but I've been told that I'm a lot, I seem a lot more intelligent to people when I'm listening and keeping my mouth shut.
Well, that's why God gave us two ears and one mouth, right? So just to get started before the hour comes to a close here, just give me a little bit on your background and how did you get involved in this kind of research and information? How did that begin for you?
Well, it really took off back around 9/11 and thereafter. And it just kind of escalated until Obama came onto the scene. And it was obvious to me that he was not a constitutional president. There was no way that he could have been a natural-born citizen since he had been adopted by someone in Indonesia, the Sotero, that married his mother.
Sotero,
because there was no dual citizenship. So it didn't matter. And the father that he claims is his blood father, his biological father, was never a U.S. citizen. So either one of those facts alone, it didn't matter if he had been born in the Oval Office, the definition of a natural-born citizen is clearly defined in the laws of nations, and that was referenced and well-known to all of those that are deemed founders. Washington even borrowed Law of Nations from an elementary school library and never returned it. So much for the chopping down the cherry tree thing. but it says specifically born on the soil of citizen parents, plural. So if your parents are not citizens at the time of your birth, you are not a natural born citizen. And, you know, they can say all they want that it's never been decided in the courts. In fact, it has. It's been even decided in the courts. But some very good attorneys out there have verified, you know, what I just described. One of them talks about a three-legged stool. The stool tops over if you don't have three legs on it, and that is that both parents and the soil is – Ius soli and ius sanguinis are the principles
right.
behind.
And, that, you know, natural. I remember when they were trying to prove that he really was born in the States, and they rolled out that bogus birth certificate, and they had they found supposedly the birth announcement of Obama's birth in Hawaii in the paper, but it turns out it was the wrong typeset for the type of typesetting that they were using at that time. So that was obviously a fake article that they just, you know, made up to try to give proof.
Well, you asked me what got me going, and that really cranked me up, if you will, and got me into deep research. And I've also been a student of scripture pretty much most of my life, except for some years where I really sowed a few wild oats, if you will. But I started comparing history with scripture, with prophecy, and saw how it lined up perfectly all the way back. And so that got my thirst for research and really recognizing what the truths really are. And I built a big picture puzzle of the whole picture of the spiritual battle that's going on globally. And that's really what we're in. We're in an escalated phase of the spiritual battle. And it's just consumed me ever since then. I started doing Blog Talk Radio with Red Beckman back in 2009. And of course, Red is a stalwart in the freedom movement. He used to travel all over. He was on TV and radio and ran for governor of Montana as a Jeffersonian Democrat. That was pretty comical. But Red passed away about a little over a year ago, and we did the Walls in Our Mind show for better part of 10 years. And now I'm hosting a show called Handling the Truth with my co-host Mike Gaddy. And we're doing kind of historical lessons amongst other things. But Gaddy is, you know, Gaddy, he is a tremendous historian. And I keep telling people when Gaddy speaks, I become a student. And
me too. I feel like I'm in a classroom, only it's really interesting. And what I really like about Mike's historical ability is not just his knowledge, but he really has a talent for pulling out that hidden bit of information that they leave out of the history books that's probably the most important thing in the whole event that reconfigures how you even see that event. And do you know what I mean?
I know very well what you mean. I mean,
yeah.
He started coming on as a guest with Red and I because he had read many of Red's books, and it had kind of been an inspiration in his life. And he likes for me to remind people of that, by the way. I mean, it was important to him. It was a life-changing experience reading Red's books for a lot of people, but especially Mike. So Mike was a guest for us many times on Walls in Our Minds over the last 4 or 5 years.
Great. And do you have a website that you're working with or just doing your blog talk and your shows? Yeah.
Just the Blog Talk Radio. Look for Handling the Truth. It's at 8 o'clock Eastern time on Thursday evenings.
Great. Yeah, I caught your last episode and it was really excellent. So I hope people just go out there to Blog Talk and check it out too. So it was sort of 9/11 was the wake up call. When did you realize there was something seriously wrong with the 9/11 story? Was it like pretty much immediately, or when did that light go off in your head that something is seriously wrong here?
Well, to talk about spiritually wrong, I'd have to say it was more of a gradual, but because I have experience in construction management and had actually witnessed some fairly tall buildings being demolished, when I was watching it live on TV with the towers coming down, the first thing out of my mouth was, "That looks like a controlled demolition." And
yeah.
I said that immediately. So obviously I had the intuition immediately that something was amiss, that it was not what they were representing it to be. But it took me some time before I really, from there on, you know, began to understand all the complexity behind it.
Yeah, it was quite a magic trick, wasn't it? The way they pulled that whole thing off. And it's still unclear exactly how they did. You know, there's different theories, but it's still unclear exactly how they brought the towers down and whether or not airplanes even crashed into those buildings or if it was some kind of a drone or something else. What are your thoughts on
that? I agree with the last part of it, but there are, I've interviewed, the president of Lawyers for 9/11 Truth. I've interviewed the president, the head guy for the Architects and Engineers. I've interviewed the guy that that did the video from JFK to 9/11 out of England. And I've also studied, what's the guy's name, Rodriguez, that was the maintenance guy in the building. He was actually the last living person to exit the building before it came down. He was one of the five master key holders. You look at the evidence on it, and there's strong evidence, and they're suing the government and trying to force them to actually do a real investigation on it, because obviously what they did was just like the cover up of the Warren Commission of JFK. It was a farce, and you look at how they wanted to ship that metal out and get it offshore, and not let anybody have an opportunity to really analyze it. You look at how the girders, major girders in that building, were cut with high temperature explosive. There's no question about it. Rodriguez, he felt a huge lift of the floor on the first floor of the building, and heard an explosion. A major explosion, like a small suitcase nuke or something, that was down three or four levels below grade, which is what allowed the water to come into that area, because there's a river underneath that area, actually, underground, and so.
Oh yeah, the Hudson River, yeah.
Exactly. So there's so much evidence that shows that the buildings were not brought down. It had thermite. It was the presence of thermite. I mean, there's just so many things. And if you really want to listen to something pretty eye-opening, Susan Lindauer did, she was at the Washington, D.C. Press Club in November of 2011. She had been under a 10-year gag order. She was actually a cousin of Andrew Card, and she had become the back channel liaison for the White House to the Iraqi embassy. And she gave them information like in June of 2001 and provided it to the White House that Saddam Hussein's people and his ambassadors gave her information that there was a threat on those buildings. So, yeah. And she was a CIA asset, even though she wasn't directly for the CIA, she was a back channel asset and provided information to her handlers at the CIA. So they knew this well in advance, and what she believes and what I personally believe is that the administration knew it was coming. And if you look at the fact that all of the evidence from these investigations, there was investigations going on within the towers, also within Building 7 of the World Trade Center, also in the office that was hit by the missile in the Pentagon. All three of those had documentation and ongoing investigations going on against the administration for some of the trillions of dollars. If you'll remember, Rumsfeld made a comment the day before 9/11 happened. He came out and admitted that there was like $2.5 or $2.6 trillion unaccounted for in the Department of Defense. Do you remember that?
Yeah, oops. Oh, yeah. Oops. We lost $2 trillion. We don't know what happened to it. Never mind.
Well, now the number's been proven to be $21 trillion. Now,
yes.
So,
yes.
And that was discovered by Catherine Austin Fitz, the gal who runs a Solari report.
And right. And Mark Skidmore. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, when he heard what she represented, and she was the ex-deputy secretary of HUD, okay? So she knows what she's talking about. So Skidmore didn't believe it. He thought that what she was saying could not possibly be true. So he and his students and everybody started investigating it and came up with exactly the same number, 21 trillion unaccounted for, which means that our currency's been diluted by that much. So our purchasing power has been diminished by, over 50% just by that item alone.
So, you believe that there's some veracity to the mini nuke theory in bringing the buildings down?
I believe that they had vans. It's interesting that they did not use a major elevator company to do the repairs on the elevator. I think Otis maybe installed those, but they didn't use Otis. They used some other company that was a fairly young company, and the company was parking white vans in the basement during off hours for probably the whole week before the buildings came down. So they were in there planting charges, demolition charges, in those buildings in advance of the 9/11 event. So it wasn't just the nuke in the bottom. It was also planted thermite demolition charges, cutting those major girders in that building to bring them down.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Terry, because if you look at the way the thing comes down, it starts, where the hole is. It's like that part of the building kind of just came down on the rest of it, and then the explosion started.
And you can literally see them. It's so clear in the Building 7, which, of course, no plane or drone or anything else hit Building 7. I mean, you start looking into Building 7 of the World Trade Center, and all of a sudden you got to go, okay, I mean,
Have you looked into Building 6 in the World Trade Center, Terry?
Not really, no.
Well, Building 6 was sort of an anomaly because basically, the roof was blown out, all the floors were blown out, but the walls around the building were still intact, and it was like a brick building. It wasn't a skyscraper like the Twin Towers, but it was right next to it. But somehow the whole roof was gone, all the floors were gone, but the floor the walls were still intact around it. And apparently the thermal imaging taken of it, a week or so later, it was like a molten volcano down there in the on the floor. It was super hot. There was molten material all over the both towers as well. So some very strange things were going on there. And if you look at the lack of debris, that wasn't dynamite that blew that building up. That's for sure.
No, it melted to steel, and jet fuel wouldn't even do that.
No, not even close. Yeah. Okay, so you went through 9/11, and you realized something was wrong, and then of course, I'm sure once Obama got in, you really started thinking something was wrong, huh?
Well, I knew it was wrong by then, but that really got me into a lot of the research and the historical stuff and the laws of nations, and it just, it just expanded my research and really started filling in. It forced me to fill in the rest of the puzzle pieces so that I could really have a pretty well-formed big picture puzzle of how we got where we are. And it takes a lot of research. I mean, we're talking, I don't know how many hundreds and maybe thousands of hours of research that I ended up putting in. And it became a passion for me. So.
Yeah. And
people need to do their own research. They're not going to have a real handle on what's going on. They really need discernment. They really need the Holy Spirit in their life, to be honest with you. The Ruach HaKodesh needs to be your guide. You need to be able to have a lens to be able to see the world and history through the lens of Scripture. It changes everything. It really does. It changes your whole perspective. And it'll also keep you from being depressed, because so many people have asked me the question, how do you get up in the morning, put on your pants, and go about your day like an ordinary person, knowing what you know? And I tell everybody, I know who the final victor is. I know who's going to win this thing ultimately. And that changes everything in your life too.
Yeah, that's true. There has to be a spiritual discernment in our lives. I totally agree. Somebody gave me a text. They thought I was confusing Building 7 with Building 6. Building 7 came down in a typical controlled demolition, but Building 6 is what I was talking about, and that's an anomaly that not many people talk about. But if you look it up, Building 6 was also completely trashed, and the roof was gone, all the floors were gone, but the walls were still standing. So I just wanted to reiterate that.
I was aware of it. When you asked me, you said if I looked into it, and it didn't mean I wasn't aware of it. I just simply haven't researched it the way I have so many other things.
Yeah, it's just sort of another little unanswered, sidebar about what exactly went on that day. But that's very interesting, because the spiritual thing is very, very important. And because this is ultimately a spiritual battle. And I totally agree with you about doing your own research, because if you don't, just having someone else spoon feed it to you, it's not the same experience. And like you said, discernment is so important, because there's so many false rabbit holes you can go down with conspiracy research and so on. And discernment is absolutely crucial to prevent you from just going down in all kinds of weird places that don't lead anywhere.
Right. Absolutely. And that's the reason it burns me that they came up and try to denigrate people by putting the word theory at the end of conspiracy. Because it's like Pat Shannon, who is an author that many people may be familiar with. He wrote Everything They Ever Told Me Was a Lie. And how true that is. But he said, those of us, it seems that the only ones of us that are concerned about the conspiracy are those of us who have studied the subject. And I yes. Tell people I deal in conspiracy fact, not conspiracy theory. That doesn't mean that occasionally we'll throw a theory out there, but primarily we're dealing with facts. And when you look at the facts, there's no question but that there has been a serious, major global conspiracy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Now, were you interested in the Kennedy assassination before 9/11 happened, or was that sort of something you just looked into, or what was?
You know, I was in the seventh grade. I still have a little bit of a memory of them announcing Kennedy's death. And for a long time, I was just thinking Kennedy was just another, one of these rich guys, right? One of these wealthy elites. And in fact, his family did come from that. But in my research in more recent years, since 9/11 and since Obama, I gained a greater deal of respect for him. Now, there's a lot of similarities between him and Trump in that he was not a he didn't live a perfect life. Let's put it that way.
And, yeah, certainly.
But he did take a stand against the banksters, and he started printing those silver certificates out of the treasury, and really was turning against the CIA. He really wanted to dismantle it. He was withholding selling weaponry to Israel. He was against the tax-exempt foundations taking over the education system. There was a number of things that got him taken out. And a lot of those same similar things are true of Trump. Working against the Federal Reserve, working against the banksters. It's amazing to me that Trump is still alive. And, there's good arguments that maybe he is he was allowed to be put in there for reasons that the elite kind of wanted him in there, to bring people back to the voting booths and to get them back involved in politics, that sort of thing, because so many of them had really just stopped participating in the system. And there's some legitimate arguments to that. But on the other side, it's been very apparent that he has worked against the central bank system. He's taken over the Federal Reserve to some extent. And it's amazing that he's still alive. But I, you know, if you believe that of him, that he is truly an enemy of the central bankers, you got to believe that he's got some divine providence keeping him alive.
Yeah, Trump's kind of a mixed bag. There's some good things about him, but what I see right now is I see a man who is not wanting to go along with what's happening. You know, his whole body language has really changed. You know, his shoulders are kind of slumped over. He's not the same confident guy that he was before. It seems like he's being forced to go along with this, but then he'll say stuff that he's not supposed to say, like, well, we're not going to have any mandatory vaccinations. And then he said just the other day, well, we're not going to shut the country down again if there's a second wave. And I guess what really got him in trouble is when he said, well, we're not going to, you know, vaccinations aren't the only answer. There's this drug called hydroxychloroquine, and that might be really helpful in stopping this. And that was a big no-no, because the only possible solution to this is a vaccine, as we all know, right?
Well, if you want to see a second wave, take a vaccine. I don't know anybody, honestly. I've talked to some people who know some people who did not get the flu vaccine that did, in fact, get the flu. But in my case, I know dozens of people who have gotten the flu, and all of them took the vaccine. The people that I know that haven't gotten the flu are the ones that have not taken the vaccine. I interviewed a Dr. Nicholson, and he was a research doctor in Houston, and his daughter had come back from the Gulf War, and she had the Gulf syndrome. So he started looking into it. He started looking into it, and he started finding that the soldiers that had been inoculated that never deployed got the Gulf syndrome. He also noticed that the children of the soldiers that came back from Iraq, the children got the Gulf syndrome.
Yes, so I've heard this.
He recognized that it was biological, and he finally determined that it was that they all got it from the vaccine. And he also developed a way of overcoming it by a lipid replacement. MLR is what they call it, but it's basically a restoration of the mitochondria, because the Gulf syndrome basically, and it had different kinds of symptoms to it, but it was an attack on the mitochondria. The biological attack was on the mitochondria, which is the energy source for the body, basically primary energy source.
Right. And so, well, so now you mentioned the second wave. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think they're going to try to pull off a second wave and bring everybody back to, you know, this great fear? Or where do you think this is going?
Well, I don't have documented evidence. You just have to look at the way things have gone in the past and recognize that they have no choice but to continue to try to destroy the middle class of America. And this whole thing is a distraction. I mean, you've got to look elsewhere besides at the pandemic itself to start to recognize what the reasons for this is. They want to stay out of jail. You got 150,000 sealed indictments sitting out there. You got all these investigations on with the Department of Justice. They want to stay out of jail. They want to be able to restart or shift the fractional reserve banking system, because it's basically run its course. All fiat currency in history always approaches its intrinsic value of zero. And we were. If you listen to, there's an interview with Jim Sinclair. I'm trying to remember. It was either X-22 or Greg Hunter that did a recent interview with Jim Sinclair. And Jim Sinclair came out with a theory that really was the first time I'd heard anybody say that. we've known for some time that the economy was on the edge of a cliff ready to crash. We knew that there was a 35-year bull bond market, longest in history, that was coming to a close, and the bond market was starting to crash. We knew that there was a huge demand for additional currency because of the way that the fractional reserve system necessarily has to keep expanding in order to sustain itself. We knew that was creating a problem, and that's one of the – so Sinclair said this. He said that we would have had a worse economic crash right now. It had already started, but that the pandemic actually reduced the demand on currency and kept the economy from crashing worse than it has.
That's an interesting theory. So you're saying that this is a cover for economic problems that were already baked in the cake, and they have no choice but to continue on with this? Is that what you're saying?
Well, they want to keep the distraction going. They want to try to keep control of the Congress. Politically, they've committed suicide in so many ways. The whole system that they've set up, the banksters that have controlled them. I mean, you were talking earlier about how people are paid off and blackmailed, and you didn't get into all the details of it, but I was listening to you right before you introduced me, and I heard you talking about some of that stuff. Well, this is how they've controlled our government for a long, long time. Once the banksters were given control of our money supply back in 1913, once they were given that control of the money supply, they became more powerful than the government.
Oh, absolutely.
The way that they've controlled the government and the media is that they start out with bribing. They'll pay them to do it. And just like you said, they'll lose their jobs. It's a threat to their job. If you want to keep making this $1 million a year when you're only worth 25 or 30, you're going to say what we tell you to say. But they also do this with politicians. They even give them Vatican bank accounts for that much. But
yeah,
then if the
yeah,
if the
totally
people don't, if they don't cooperate, then they'll drug them and have them wake up with a young boy in bed with them and blackmail them. I mean, so this
just
whole
like
pedophile
the Godfather thing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the senator wakes up and, oh, I didn't think I heard her. I don't know what happened.
Well, then they make you take the bribe. They don't want you just blackmailed, and they don't want you just bribed. They want you both. They want to be able to criminalize you, to turn you into a criminal so that they can control you. And so many people are not able to get into any position of authority unless they have that kind of control over them. You look at John Roberts. My goodness. Here's a guy who lived the gay lifestyle as a young man. Matter of fact, I understand he hung out with Ted Cruz, and both of them have arranged marriages with adopted children. Well, Robert's children were illegally adopted. Now, I don't know that that's all Obama had on him, but it's certainly one of the things he had on him to get him to say that the Affordable Care Act mandate was a tax. You want to know why
he
said that?
Yeah, and don't forget that.
He was blackmailed.
No, go ahead.
He was blackmailed.
Right. And that's exactly right. And then don't forget, as soon as he changed his vote on this mandate, he goes off to Malta, the island of Malta, because he was a member of, or he is a member of the Knights of Malta as well. So he had to go report to his masters, you know, after he did the job he was supposed to do. So it's a complex web of deception and motives that they bring to people. Now, I wanted to ask you a quick question. Okay, so let's say they're going to try to do this second wave of COVID-19. How, you know, it really hasn't ended up being all that deadly. And so how are they, how do you think they would try to spread such a thing? Do you think they would actually use some kind of covert method to try to spread some kind of contagion to create this second wave? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, historically, viruses are transferred by injection. But before this, if you had asked how is a virus transferred, they would have said, well, a virus is produced inside your body. It's not transferred unless you're injected with it. Okay? A virus is basically a solvent chemical designed by your body, by your molecular structure. It's produced within your molecular structure in order to dissolve foreign toxic matter within your body. Now, your molecular structure identifies toxin by frequency. The protein that wraps a molecule identifies a frequency, and it tells the molecule and pulls out the data from the nucleus of the molecule, and it produces, it tells it how to conduct itself. It's either in a productive mode or a defensive mode, generally speaking. And when it goes into a defensive mode and it identifies a foreign toxin, then it produces a chemical which is known as a virus. Okay? That's, you probably haven't heard anybody saying that out there, but.
No, I've heard this theory, and it's an interesting theory, but how do you think that they would try to create this second wave if it, you know, really can't happen organically? Are they just going to, you know, fake it until they make it, or, you know, how do you think that they will try to manifest this so-called second wave to keep this hysteria going?
Well, a vaccine would be one of the ways that they would actually put it into the population.
Right.
Let me share something else real quick. These tests that they're doing do not isolate a virus. The guy that developed this RNA test, it's a genetic material test that they're testing for a genetic material. Basically, anybody that's had any exposure to any virus over the last 3 years may have this RNA, this genetic material.
Doctors
have said there's up to an 80% false positive on the test, but they haven't identified a virus. You need to understand this. This test identified genetic material. So if you say, okay, we've got to test all these meat packers over here, well, you're going to for sure get some positive responses on that to any one of them that's been exposed to any virus at all.
Right.
So what is it that's causing this? Some of these doctors, like the ER doctors in New York, identified the fact that these people were not dying of pneumonia and that the ventilators were creating a stress condition that could cause them to die faster. Because what was happening?
Absolutely,
was
those things are very dangerous, and they're really sort of a last-ditch effort to keep people alive. You don't just hook somebody up to a ventilator if they have a bad cold, you know. And I thought it was funny how Cuomo said, "We need 30,000 ventilators right now, or people are going to die." And what a bunch of hysteria!
Exactly. It is, and it's deliberate hysteria. They're deliberately misleading people. The whole narrative that we've heard is misleading. What the doctors in New York identified was that the hemoglobin, the red blood cells, had the iron stripped out of it, and that's why the lungs were under stress, because they could not deliver oxygen into the blood, because it's the iron in the blood that carries the oxygen.
Yeah. Right,
and putting somebody on a ventilator was killing them, because that's not helping them. They needed something to stabilize the iron in the hemoglobin. And that's where the hydroxychloroquine comes in.
And yeah, the, but the, I, I just was reading this morning that the WHO is warning, do not use hydroxychloroquine to fight this virus. It's very dangerous. I think the reason it's so dangerous is that it only costs about 50 cents a dose to treat people.
Or 25, yeah.
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 And it's been used.
Well, now Facebook's out there. Anybody that posts Dr. Cahill's interview on Facebook is likely to get a notice from Facebook saying that there are numerous representations about the coronavirus in Dr. Cahill's video that are inaccuracies. And Dr. Cahill is right in line with Dr. Erickson, Dr. Lozano, Dr. Barkey, Dr. Iaduri, Shiva Iaduri, Dr. Bitar, and the 600 doctors that have now submitted a letter to the president saying that this lockdown is unnecessary and is counterproductive and is costing lives. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. And even Dr. Fauci said that, well maybe the lockdowns are bad for people's health. He just said that the other day after, you know, months and months of, oh, we can't open up, you got to stay in your home forever. There's some really interesting dynamics coming out right now, and a lot of people are having to change their tune very rapidly.
Well, the fear just drives me crazy, Dave. I tell you, I've never slowed down. I've never locked down through this whole thing. I'm involved in the construction industry to some extent. I'm a real estate broker, developer, construction manager, and I've been outsourcing myself to do estimates. And so through this whole thing, I've been considered an essential worker, and I've been able to travel around, and I've just continued to do estimates all over. But you get out there in the public, and you see all of these people wearing these masks, and it's like, people, this is not how viruses transfer. it's a lie. The whole mask thing is counterproductive. There's been young children who have died from wearing these masks. There's been people who have passed out behind the wheel of a car wearing a mask.
I know. And it's really sick. It's really sick because you're breathing your exhaust essentially, and you're not oxygenating your body properly. So it's really a sick thing. Where you are, what percentage of people roughly do you think are buying into this? Or like when you talk to people, do you try to bring this stuff up to people? And what kind of response do you get from people when you try to bring up, you know, the information, you know, in terms of percentages roughly?
Well, you know, those percentages really haven't changed much since the Revolutionary War. There was a third of the people who supported the war. There was a third of the people who were against the war. And there was a third of the people who really just didn't want to be bothered by the war, didn't care, just either way. And those percentages are not – you can apply those. You look at how many people elected Obama. Was it 23% of the voting populace elected Obama? 23%?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So you've got that 23 to 25% of the people who are paranoid out of their minds and are just, you know, they've got the Trump derangement syndrome kind of thing. And those people are obviously buying into this thing totally. And then you've got about the same number of people on the conservative side of the fence, whether they're libertarian or GOP or unaffiliated, whatever, but they're conservative people who are thinking people and are really kind of have some idea of what's going on. And they're resisting this for the most part. And then you got that rest of, which is pretty much half of the population. Some of them follow along blindly. Some of them don't follow along blindly. But they really don't know. They hear some things. They may know something's wrong or that, you know, but they're really not into it. They really don't have knowledge of it. And I think when you look at scripture about my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. I think that's really where our population is.
Boy, that really is true. That's a good point, Terry. That's a very good point. Have you been following any of these videos that people are making in New York City? Have you heard of this Operation Gotham 2020 thing that was going on at the Javits Convention Center in New York City?
I heard just a little bit about it. I haven't followed it. I really don't much about it.
Well, just very briefly, it was like, they brought in all these army medics in from all over the country and set up this hospital at the convention center in New York City, at the Javits Center. So this right. one guy sort of went there and just started filming these people, you know, and they all looked very casual. They're just walking around with snacks, drinking Cokes, just not looking like they're working on this, you know, dire pandemic and the world's about to come to an end. And it's, you know, it was like this phony operation where they just brought in all these army people and they were basically doing nothing. Just another indication that this thing is like a staged event that we're watching. I guess that's the point. Have you seen
You're
any
aware
other
of
examples
event
of that?
Well, you've seen event 201, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That happened, what, in October?
Yeah, it was like a month before the first case of COVID in China, conveniently. It took place in New York City, of all places.
It was several months before the first case. And I got to tell you, I don't buy the fact that's where this originated or when it originated at all. I believe this virus has been with us a lot longer than that.
I tend to agree. I think so. You really can't believe a word they tell us.
Jim Willie just did an interview, and again, it was either with whichever one Sinclair was on, whether it was X-22 or Greg Hunter. The other one did a Jim Willie interview in the last 10 days or so, and Willie called this the Rockefeller Plandemic. Because
well said, yes.
Rockefeller planned this out many years ago. I mean, it really goes all the way back to the mid-80s. But he used the term 10 years ago. He said it's been planned out for at least 10 years. Well, the planning really started before that, but it was well planned up to, 10 years ago.
Yeah, the lockstep documents from the Rockefeller Foundation, yes, in 2010, yes.
And Bill Gates, because the 92 Rockefeller heirs, none of them have really stepped up and taken control of the Rockefeller empire. But it appears that Bill Gates has now assumed that position.
Interesting, because, I always knew that, Bill Gates is just the salesman for this agenda. And that fits that he would be connected closely to the Rockefellers. Can you expand on that more?
Well, you have to start talking about genocide. People find it very difficult to accept the fact that anybody would want to kill off 85% of the population. And you when you start researching in this stuff and looking at their own writings and their own words and Rockefeller's words and Gates' words, you find out that these guys are criminally insane. I was just listening to Paul Allen's talking about the book he's just put out. You know who Paul Allen is?
No, tell me.
Paul Allen was Gates' partner in Microsoft. He was also his high school friend. They started Microsoft together. Gates took 60% of it and pushed Allen to a minority position, but Allen had talked about how Gates would yell and scream. And when he started talking about him, I said, boy, that sounds an awful lot like Hillary Clinton. You know, when she's out in the front in the public, they act like these cool, calm, collected personality. And then when they get behind closed doors, they treat people like dirt. and they curse, and they and if you confront them on anything, you may get into a 2-hour yelling match and never get anywhere. And that's the way Allen describes Gates. So he had been very offended over the years by the way Gates had treated him. And he's now put out a book to that effect. Well, it turns out that these people's hearts are hardened. And when you start looking at the perversion side of it, and you look at Scripture, and Scripture tells you that our Father in heaven eventually will harden their hearts so they can't come back.
Oh, yes. They cross a line. And, you know, I think there's some evidence that Bill Gates is actually involved in some kind of, occultic, satanic activities. He hired this Marina Abramovich woman to do a video for Microsoft. And you have to wonder, well, why would you pick someone that's an open Satanist to represent a new product? Why would you do that? You know, and then last week, his wife, Melinda Gates, was on the Today Show. I don't know if you caught that. And she was wearing an upside down cross, a very small one. But if you looked at it, she was wearing an upside down cross. Mm-hmm. And which, of course, you know, is obviously a sign of something seriously wrong with these people. But one thing I found really interesting, this video was actually from the Today Show, right? And it's on the official Today Show YouTube page. Well, there was over 1,000 comments on this, and almost all of them were negative towards this woman on the Today Show comment page, which I thought to be very encouraging that, you know, more people than ever have a clue about what's going on.
Yep. Well, Gates has been on the Lolita Express. He's just another pervert.
I'm kind of convinced you don't even get, you know, in the club at a high level unless you participate in these kind of things. And like, it kind of ties into what you were saying earlier. It has to do with blackmail and sort of joining a club that you can't quit. I mean, once you're involved in pedophilia and these sort of activities, there's no going back.
So you're dealing with a psychopath. You're dealing with people who do not know right from wrong. They believe that this is an empowering thing. It empowers self. They worship self. They want to be gods. They want to live off of the sweat of another man's brow. That's who the enemy is. They do not have a conscience. And so the rest of the population that has a conscience cannot even fathom what goes through these people's minds.
Yeah, I think it's difficult for your average person to comprehend and even conceive of the kind of evil and debauchery that these people represent. Because we've been taught, oh, these are our leaders, and you know, they're, you know, all the fairy tales we're told. It's hard for people to make that jump into, you know, this Pizzagate kind of thing and the way these people really behave. And it's just due to programming, you know, an entire lifetime of programming.
Yep. That's a fact. Well, I don't know if this is what you wanted to talk about today, but I guess that's where we went.
Oh, no, we're just having a conversation, and this has been very interesting, Terry. So let me ask you, where do you see this going, like over the next, you know, into next winter and into 2021? How do you see this playing out? And, you know, what are your feelings on that?
Well, I can see it going a number of different ways. I believe that the banks are going to try to go to a cashless situation. They're going to try to probably come out with their own. They already have, like Ripple and in the digital world. And people need to stay clear of any digital currency controlled by banks. I don't even like the idea of government getting involved in digital currency, but I can see that that Trump appears to be trying to bring us to a soft landing in this thing. I knew because of the economic situation and the debt situation, that we were going to have an economic crash. And here we are. I've been predicting that for a long time, and I did not foresee the health crisis being a part of it. I also didn't recognize until I heard Sinclair that maybe the health crisis actually may be helping it rather than hurting it in some way, because it's cut the demand. Trump, in order to get reelected, has got to maintain the illusion of this good economy. And this is one of the distractions, one of the reasons why they brought this down and escalated this information pandemic to make it so much worse than it is from the information flow, from the propaganda that they put out there, was to try to stop Trump from having his rallies, from to kill his economy that he was getting the credit for. He's got to maintain things until he gets reelected. If he doesn't win the election, if the Democrats take control of our federal government right now, however bad people or whatever distrust people have for Trump, it pales in comparison to what we'll be facing. If Hillary had gotten in, there's no question we would have been in World War III.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing I see from the Democrats is in the post-Trump era, whenever that's going to be, I see Democrat rule in perpetuity because there's no Republican on the horizon that has any charisma or vision, and they're just going to flood the country. If they flood the country for another 4 years with illegal aliens and so-called refugees and everything, you know, the Republicans won't ever have the votes again to win much of anything.
So there's got to be a reset coming. And I know, gosh, that means so many different things to different people. You know, I don't believe that, you know, the Iraqi dinar is going to reset. I don't buy into any of that stuff. What I'm saying is that there's got to be a reset in the valuation of commodities and a reset in our currency. There's got to be that. And what we've got to avoid is for the banksters, the central bankers, to control that. If they control it, we're toast. Forget it. We are under a communist fascist regime. And
yeah, that's a good term, Terry, because it is a hybrid of communism and fascism. Do you think there's going to be a standard election this year? Because I've kind of wondered myself, you know, they're talking about doing this mail-in voting, and there isn't much focus on the election right now. Where do you think that's going?
Well, there's been some prosecutions. If you look out in California after the 2018 election, there was quite a few people prosecuted for election fraud out there. And there's been a lot going on behind the scenes to try to create a fair election. So the Democrats have got to push for some way of loading up the ballot box and doing a mail-in election in some places that haven't done that before. Is a real threat. It would provide them with a new way of cheating. You'll notice that the way the polls were in the last election, they made it look a lot closer than it was, because it has to appear to be close in order for them to be able to cheat. So they're doing that again. They're doing the same thing. They're trying to say that Biden, I mean, what a lousy, you know, that guy's senile. And if anybody believes that the polls are 50-50 right now, you're dreaming. I mean, there's no way that's possible. I can tell you that because I'm politically active in our area in Colorado, there's a lot of people who did not vote 8 years ago or 12 years ago that are now just angry at the whole way that the Congress has treated Trump, particularly through this whole fake impeachment stuff. There's a lot of people that are going to come to the polls that maybe you didn't even vote 4 years ago, because some of them were anti-Trumpers. Some of them didn't vote for Trump 4 years ago because they didn't like his personality. They didn't like the fact that he had been a little bit of a womanizer through his career. They didn't like, you know, the fact that he's an ego. I mean, you got to have an ego to be in that position. I mean, there's no way you could ever get in that position without having a pretty good size ego. Well, a lot of those people that did not vote for him 4 years ago are going to vote for him now because they finally recognize that he's a lot less dangerous than any alternative. And, you know, I know the argument about we shouldn't even be voting, but I can't see that being productive at this point. So, but I think there's going to be some states that were blue 4 years ago. They're going to be red now. I do.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's funny how you mentioned the big turnout he used to get at these rallies. You know, he'd pack in 20,000 people in these stadiums. It'd be standing room only. And I'll bet you Biden would have trouble getting 400 or 500 people together. Say what you want about Trump. But he was able to get a huge crowd together.
He was packing in 40,000 and only 15 to 20 could get in.
Right. You're right. Absolutely. Yes. Right.
So my point is that if he does what he should do, and I have no crystal ball for that, I'm not going to be surprised either way. It's just I pray. All you can do is pray, because we don't have any real voice in Washington D.C. We don't have any means of getting redress of any grievance. I mean, we've petitioned. Almost every violation you can imagine, we've petitioned since 1995, and there's never been a single redress or answer to any petition that's been put into the federal government. So that's a waste of time. So I don't have a crystal ball that predicts what's going to happen, you know, for this election. But my point is, if he does what he should do, we're going to see a new currency. It's going to be either sound money, which would be gold and silver, and some kind of digital system so that you can digitize your proprietary ownership so that you don't have to make change, so to speak. So you can work with a digital card, but it's based on the actual precious metal that you hold. That's what I would like to see. I don't think that's what we'll see. I think you'll probably go to some other fiat currency, which I think is a mistake, because all fiat currencies approach their intrinsic value, even if they're backed by something. I think we need to go to a bailment system, not a fractional reserve system, but I got a feeling we'll probably see some form of fractional reserve system. But what he should do, he'll take the control back to the government of the current of the money supply, and it'll be at least backed by gold. And I believe that that's what's coming. You look at the person that he's wanting to put in there, that gal, I forget her name right offhand. Anyway, I'm not going to take the time to look it up, but whatever her name is, she's a gold bug. And that's what we need. We need a restructuring, and it's going to be a little bit painful for people for a short period of time. But once that we go through that transition, he's got to get himself reelected. He's got to maintain whatever illusion he's got to maintain until he gets elected, and then he can officially make some of these changes. That's what should happen. It's what could happen, but I'm not asking anybody to put a wager on that.
Yeah. Morpheus in the chat room has an interesting comment. He said, Stalin said, it's not those that vote that counts. It's those who count the votes. Yeah, that's certainly true. Look, we're coming to the last couple of minutes of the show. Tell me again when your podcast is on.
8 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Mountain Time on Blog Talk Radio Thursday nights.
Okay. And
it's called Handling the Truth. Handling the
Truth.
Okay,
great. And I just want to thank everyone here for coming on and listening. And please take some time and go on to Revolution Radio or freedomslips.com and make a donation to this very important bastion of free speech that we have. And this station is more important than ever. So take a little time and show a little love to this place. Everyone's doing their job for free here. No one's making money, not the hosts or the management. So take some time and show a little love, guys. And Terry, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show. This has been a really good conversation. And I like that you have a spiritual perspective on top of the knowledge that's in your mind, because this ultimately really is a spiritual battle that we're fighting.
Absolutely. And thanks for having me on, Dave.
Okay, well, you take care, and we'll be in touch, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Yes, sir.
All righty.
Have a good week.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, guys, we're in the last couple minutes of the show, and the music ought to kick in any minute. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And I think this is a good time we had here. And let's keep talking to everybody you know and try to get information out to people about what's going on. We can't just sit back and let them reconfigure our entire society. It's just not going to happen. And more than ever, we have to stand up and say no. Okay, that's it. The music's kicking in, guys. You guys take care, and until next week, bye-bye.